Welcome to Primary Care Talks. I'm Dr. Hasan Chauhan, and this is episode 3 of my podcast series. Today I'm going to be talking to Dr. Alina Rosa, who's conducting a project in genomics. Both Dr. Rosa and myself will be conducting separate projects, and so today we're going to be talking to each other about some of the obstacles we're facing and some of the triumphs we've had so far. Should be an interesting one. So, Dr. Rosa, can I call you Alina? Is that
yes,
all right?
Yes, that's right.
So welcome to Primary Care Talks. We're here in Colchester, actually. You've been kind enough to come down to me for this recording. So, Alina, would you mind telling me a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you then chose genomics?
Yes, of course. So I'm a GP. I'm based in Huntington, and I initially trained sort of around the area, Cambridge area, and I moved to Cambridgeshire from London in 2009, and I've developed an interest in sort of genetics initially during my studies, and I have always been fascinated about sort of science, and I'm also a honorary clinical lecturer at Queen Mary University, so I'm teaching sort of dental undergraduates and medical undergraduates, general medicine, and I actually studied at Queen Mary University, so I did my medical studies at Barts in London. I came across the health education genomics program when I attended one of the conferences in London. And it was a conference called Festival of Genomics. It's quite a big conference, which brings along a lot of scientists and clinicians from various sectors. And so they discussed various things in terms of new developments in the field of genomics. And that's how I sort of come to apply for a program in genomic medicine. I'm currently completing the program at Cambridge University and Sanger Institute, along my work as a GP.
So as most portfolio GPs, you've got all sorts of other roles that you're juggling along with,
yes,
with this, is that right? So tell me, there might be some non-clinicians, or in fact some clinicians, who probably don't understand the term genomics, mm-hmm, and what it means. Could you maybe explain to people?
So, as GPs, we are quite sort of familiar with genetics in connection to single gene disorders, you know, like the cystic fibrosis or sickle cell disease or other sort of familial cancers. But genomics concentrate on the entire genome of a person and human, while genetics looks at more sort of individual genes or set of genes. And what genomic does, it gives us a broader as well as a little bit more complex spectrum of information in order to understand about the health as well as disease. And as you might have heard, the research in genomics is moving very rapidly, and there's lots of development around genomics, and it can actually impact the care we offer to our patients. There's lots of new genes and gene functions that have been identified recently, and also new tests become available, and genomics can contribute directly to our understanding of more common conditions compared to before, sort of genetics, more single gene disorders, rare things. While with genomics, we try to learn more about more common conditions like diabetes, obesity, what is the actual underlying genetic problem. And hopefully that will help us or provide us with better sort of information, and we can provide more support for the patient if we get that information. So we can offer preventative treatments and better diagnosis and essentially better treatments.
Okay. So thanks for that explanation, Alina. Do you mind if I ask you at what point you think you got interested in genomics? Because you're clearly quite passionate about it, and you know quite a lot about it as well. So at what point did you think, you know, actually, this is for me, this is something I want to explore and get more involved in?
So actually, initially during my, I think, GP training time, you know, everyone, when they prepare for the CSA exams and sort of genetics, everyone was very scared of genetics, and mm-hmm, they always found it quite a complex field. And I always was interested in genetics. And then in 2012, when David Cameron announced the 100,000 genome projects, and then, I, you know, the Genomics England were talking about this project, that they were running the project, and I started reading around it, and I was looking at some courses, what I can do to improve my knowledge, do some CPDs, and that's how I come across the Festival of Genomics, try to attend, and they were offering courses for clinicians in genomic medicine.
So you had an interest and then also had an opportunity that arose at the same time that allows you to...
Yes, it seems to be coming sort
fate.
Of...
Fate.
Oh, right. Potentially.
Okay. So many listeners out there may not know that actually there's also... I'm also doing a project as well in genomics. And maybe we can talk a little about that as well. Mm-hmm. But before we do, let's just try and understand a little bit about... So your project for genomics for the Eastern Academic Health Science Network... what's it focusing on?
So the project is focusing on implementing pharmacogenetic testing in primary care. And I'm looking at two conditions. One is depression and the other one is familial hypercholesterolemia. And for some of the listeners that might not be familiar with what is pharmacogenetics, mm-hmm. it's basically looking at how genetic variation can affect our response to medication. So the little small changes that we carry in our genetic makeup, and it can actually affect how we metabolize some of the medication. So I'm looking into sort of why some people don't respond very well to antidepressants. And the other project is in familial hypercholesterolemia. So what we're trying to do is to use an IT toolkit to try and identify some of the FH patients that are still undiagnosed, because FH is a genetic condition, familial hypercholesterolemia, that affects about 1 in 200 people, and only 1 in 6 patients are diagnosed with FH. So there's lots of patients out there that's still underdiagnosed. So what we can do to try and identify them early and put them on the right treatment, because they need quite high-intensity statin therapy, and as you know, patients find it difficult to tolerate statins. So can we offer pharmacogenetic tests to those patients as well to assess the response to statins? So those are the two things that I'm interested in at this stage.
So both really prevalent topics, really, in primary care. I think depression in itself, we know, is a very common presentation within primary care. So with regards to depression, how do you see this impacting on the consultation? So if I'm seeing somebody with depression, what difference is this going to make to me as the GP treating my patient and the patient in terms of the treatment they get?
Mm-hmm. So if you take a depression, so from experience, on average, it's going to take about sort of 4 months to identify the right antidepressant for a patient. And during that time, you know, the patients would need to have multiple appointments, will require sort of trial of multiple antidepressants. They might get side effects from the medication. So what at the moment we're doing, it's sort of more of a trial and error approach. So if we can offer pharmacogenetics to some of those patients, we can identify how they will metabolize some of those drugs. And if you know this information from the beginning, we can actually improve this diagnostic process. So in the long run, what we're trying to do is to maybe save and free up some of the appointments, and of course, at the same time, improve patient care and quality of life.
So are we leading to a point where we'd be able to tailor prescriptions, do you think, more effectively? Is that where we're headed?
I think that's what we aim in. So we want to, with pharmacogenetics, hopefully it will help us to prescribe medication more accurately and will potentially make treatment more effective.
Okay. And in terms of clinicians, so this will make life better for us. So as you said, we'll have less appointments, and it also means that actually there's less repetition. So you'll be able to treat the patient better first time and hopefully get a better outcome for that patient as well, which is a lot more satisfying for a clinician, isn't it?
Yes, and that's what, with a project, that's what we're trying to identify and also assess the cost effectiveness.
And I guess it's fairly similar with familial hypercholesterolemia, isn't it? So you're right in that it's, you know, I'm a trainer and I'm constantly going on to my trainees about, it's a common audit, isn't it, every few years to test against, you know, what was, I think, Simon Broom criteria, I think it's called something else now.
Yes.
But you test against that and say, well, have you got familial hypercholesterolemia? And then you might get to a point where you think, yes, you have, I'm going to send you to a clinic. And that's when you then suddenly hit a bit of a wall somewhere in terms of,
Is it endocrinology you send to? Is it a biochemist? Is there a special lipid clinic? And so do you think that's going to disappear once something like this takes effect?
Potentially it can help, but the only sort of issue is that how are we going to deal with the families? Because of course we need to, I think sort of specialist clinic, they can offer this extra support, and they have genetic counselors available, because you need to do cascade testing for family members, and you need to provide sort of counseling for family members. So that's why sort of involving specialist is quite important for familial hypercholesterolemia, because I think if you try to do it in GP practice again, it's going to be quite a tricky thing to do, because we don't have a lot of genetic counselors in our practice, unless GPs are confident that they can counsel patients and then sort of speak to the families and explain the implications, offer them testing. And those patients would need to have confirmatory testing before we start them, like on statin treatments. But I'm talking about family members, like children, because what we're trying to do is to identify family members at an early stage, you know, children that might be at risk of developing heart problems in the future, so they need to be on statins from 10 years of age. And of course you need to confirm the diagnosis, you can't just give them the treatment. So for that they would need to have genetic counseling. So at this stage I think we might need to involve sort of specialist, but it might change in the future.
Okay. So you said you're going to be using an IT tool for the hypercholesterolemia.
So IT tool is basically to identify potentially, because maybe there were patients that had a cholesterol test and it was very high, more than sort of 7.5, but now NICE guidelines says we need to look at cholesterol more than 9, and also looking at the family history of any cardiac problems at an early age, sort of before 50. And then screen and find, have we missed any of those patients? And then look, do we need to refer those patients for confirmatory testing? But we can offer at the same time pharmacogenetic tests, because we will still treat them in the same way. We're still going to offer them statins, but the dose will be different. And that's the problem, because some of those patients might not tolerate statins very well at such a high dose. So by identifying how well they metabolize the medication, do they really need that high dose? Maybe giving them the standard dose will still be enough, because they are poor metabolizers, so they break down the medication quite slowly. So if you give them quite a high dose, that drug will accumulate and cause terrible side effects, and then the patient will stop taking the statin. Okay. That's where we are at the moment.
You're listening to Primary Care Talks with Dr. Hassan Chahan.
What's your take on genetic counselling? Do you think it's relevant, irrelevant? Do you think it's something GPs can do? Or do you think it's something that's really a specialist talent that needs a lot of work and courses and training?
Genetic counselling, I think you need to have a bit of understanding of genetic condition, and also think about the implication it will have on other family members. And I think it's the clinicians should have a competency to be able to provide that information to the patient. At this stage, I think there should be specialist trained, sort of either nurses or clinicians who would have done some courses and are qualified to be classified as genetic counselors.
Okay. So that all sounds really exciting, doesn't it? I think as a project, and I'm hoping, you know, with our project, we'll be able to transform the way we actually counsel our patients and test our patients and then hopefully treat them. But life's not always that great, is it? So I'm sure you've come across some barriers or obstructions. And so, you know, for me, part of this was around the issue of getting training for counseling. And some of it is really about the cost and actually access to the genetic testing. What sort of barriers have you hit or are you coming across trying to implement this project?
I think there's quite a few barriers of implementing genetic pharmacogenetic testing in primary care. Of course, clinicians have to be trained and have an understanding about this particular field of medicine, which is quite new. Also, patient education, you need to manage patients' expectations, because of course you don't want to oversell some of the things, so the patient has to have a good knowledge of what you try to do. And also looking into sort of how we will integrate this information, all these results, how we're going to add it into our existing electronic records. Because, as you know, when we test for some of the things, we want to make sure they're there and they flag up if we prescribe in the future, another person comes in, another GP, or the patient goes to another practice. Also to assess at the stage if it's cost effective.
So are there skeptics out there? So have you got, do you think if there's somebody out there who says, well, this is nonsense, you know, that the evidence isn't great, or this isn't specific enough, or patients aren't, you can't be that specific, what would you say to them?
I don't think I've seen, I think actually it's been quite positive, mm-hmm. and everyone seems to be quite interested and keen to try some of the things, especially for antidepressants, because as you know, it's quite a long process to establish a patient on the right treatment. And if we can prove that it can actually save the appointment time and can be cost effective, I think it will benefit both the NHS and primary care as well as a patient.
So what about choice, Alina? Do you think there's a chance we might start restricting choice if we start to implement these sorts of changes?
I think that it also depends on the on the situation and also what drug you try to offer the patient. So if you're talking about sort of cancer treatments, you know, there's some things that you really need to have a test because of the potential, the side effect that the medication can cause. So we don't want to give a patient a drug that it's not going to be effective and also they're going to develop side effects. So it's better to try and identify what is a suitable drug to which they are likely to respond.
Okay. Do you think this is going to then be part of the future? So do you think we'll get to a point in Star Trek fashion where you can walk into surgery, just be tested with a blood test and be told everything that you need for the future? Do you think we're nearly there?
I think it still might take a bit of time for things to be implemented because, of course, we need to train quite a few clinicians and healthcare professionals. Also, the patients would need to have an understanding. But we should not forget that genetic sort of testing is not just the only thing that will sort of help us make the decision and assess how the patient responds to medication. We need to think about other factors that influence the patient's response to medication, use sort of a holistic approach. I think pharmacogenetic or genetic test, there will be sort of an extra decision tool for us that can improve and tailor the treatment even further.
So Alina, going forward, do you think, you know, we may have touched on this before, but do you think this is going to be a bit more mainstream? So should the likes of commissioners or health authorities be looking at actually investing in this sort of research or provision? So that it then becomes more cost effective? What do you think?
I think it's quite important that we can try and see if we can improve the way we tailor the treatment in more effective ways so it benefits the patients as well as sort of improve the service in a way as well and can save the costs in the long run as well.
So we think there's commissioners out there that should be looking at what we're doing with these genomics projects and seeing whether it's reproducible on a bigger scale, because hopefully if we prove what we want to prove, that there's a place for genomics in everyday primary care and secondary care, tertiary care, but more so in the community, that might be something they can invest more in, which makes it more,
of course,
realistic, yeah, affordable and available for our everyday patients in the community.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So Alina, tell me, you obviously got these two projects going. So what are your plans for the next year? So what do you think, firstly related to these, what's the trajectory? What are we looking at in terms of timescales?
So hopefully, I mean, from this project, if we make it work, we hope if we can sort of try and scale it up and sort of involve more practices, because at the moment we try to involve up to sort of 10 practices to participate. I think we're looking maybe towards beginning of next year.
Okay. So beginning of next year, we'll have an idea as to what sort of impact it's had in terms of actually you getting through some patients.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And then hopefully we can give more answers.
All right. And what about you? Where are you going to be heading this next year? Have you got any other plans? Or is this pretty much taken over your life at the moment?
I think it's keeping me busy at the moment. What we're trying to do with this project is also to create sort of a website where we can have a bit of a educational material available for patients as well as clinicians. If they have any questions, we will see if we can have a sort of a multidisciplinary team or something involved. But again, it's something we'll still have to look into.
Looking into the future. So that sounds like grand plans you've got there that you're looking forward to. Alina, so if there's somebody out there who wants to know a little bit more about it now and thinks, do you know what, I don't know about genomics, so I want to know a bit more, where should they go to, do you know, to learn a bit more?
There are resources available. So Health Education England has a lot of sort of modules, CPD modules, as well as people, they can do the certificate and diploma courses and or masters in genomic medicine. And also FutureLearn is a website that provides free material on genomics, free modules, CPD modules, and it's been created by St. George's Universities. So I think those are the two main ones that I would recommend.
Great. St. George's is where I did my undergraduate degree.
Oh, so really?
Fantastic place, yeah. Great reputation.
So how are you getting on with your project?
Well, thanks for asking, Alina, actually. So we're also in Colchester looking at implementing a genomics project, but mine's linked to asthma, specifically in children. So I've been quite interested in asthma, actually, since I was at medical school, actually. And I've had a complicated career, but before I started off in my surgical training, I actually wanted to do chest medicine. So I've always had a little bit of an interest in asthma. Mm-hmm. And it excited me to know that there's genetic testing available that allows me to tell whether or not people would be responsive to steroids or indeed to beta-2 agonists. Mm-hmm. As you know, these are pretty much staple treatment in asthma. Mm-hmm. So my project is going to be looking at children minute from the age of 5 to 15. And what I'm going to be doing is looking at a small cohort, initially of probably about 50 patients, but ramping up to hopefully up to 400, I'm going to be getting them to test, after the appropriate counselling, testing them for these particular genes to see whether they're responsive to steroids or beta-2 agonists. Mm-hmm. Now, it's slightly different to your project in that I have to be careful, obviously, because I don't want to choose brittle asthmatics, and I need to make sure that I don't derail anybody who's a stable asthmatic as well. So part of my challenge, as well as doing all of the things involving actually accessing the test, is I've been involving one of our local consultants and to try and help steer me towards which patients may or may not be suitable for this testing.
Of course.
One of the biggest challenges for this, as I'm sure you'll agree, is I don't want to raise people's expectations.
Yes.
As you know, treating children with asthma, you know, steroid inhalers are pretty much staple treatment, and that's followed, you know, that's nice guidelines as well. But it's always the biggest anxiety for parents is, are you going to put my child on steroids? You know, accepting that there's unlikely to be any systemic effects, there's still that concern. Mm-hmm. And so what I don't want is to set the expectation regionally or nationally to say, actually, you know, there's a chance that this test is available. So there is that expectation that I've got to manage. But hopefully in the next month or so, we should be getting to a point where I can start the appropriate counselling and testing of these children to be able to then optimise their treatment.
Very interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
So thank you for asking that question. I've been dying to tell you about it. So,
thank you.
Alina, it's been a really useful opportunity for me to have this conversation with you. Now, obviously, we've had chats in the past, but this is the first time we've had the opportunity to actually, I wouldn't say grill each other, that sounds a bit...
And meet each other.
Yeah. But, you know, to bounce ideas off each other. And I'm hoping it was useful for you to be able to get some of that information out in this podcast. I hope that people out there listening will get some benefit from it. And I think, you know, it's over the next few months, it's going to be great to see your project and mine and see how they flourish. Hopefully this is the start of something fantastic in medicine. And maybe we're going to be the pioneers in terms of changing how patients are treated and so implementing genomics. So hopefully
it's a very exciting time.
Indeed. So I'm looking forward to the next 6 months or the next year to see what happens. my final request is just there may be people out there who want to get in touch with you specifically. Would it be possible for us to put your contact details on the website for them to be able to get in touch?
Yes, of course, yes. I can give you my details.
Thank you.
A quick reminder, if you are planning local changes or initiatives, always involve NHS England to make sure your plans fit within the national guidelines.